We think that we'll be able to make these resources available to the U.S. in an environmentally acceptable manner.
Plans for a lease sale in the National Petroleum Reserve on the North Slope. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, the 16th of July. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, despite opposition, vehicle emissions testing will continue in Anchorage.
The iron program should die. Put a stake in it. Kill it.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Providing statewide news coverage since 1978, we are the Alaska Public Radio Network, APRN, your source for Alaska's news.
The Bush administration plans an oil and gas lease sale in the northeastern part of the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska, this October. The record of decision came out today. The Bureau of Land Management originally tried to lease the area in 2006, but was stopped by a court order that required them to look at the cumulative environmental impacts of the sale, particularly the area around Teshikpuk Lake, an important wildlife habitat area. Assistant Interior Secretary Steve Allred told a news conference today that some of that area was trimmed from the new lease sale plan and deferred from leasing for 10 years.
I think that we have made the right decision in terms of deferring leasing for 10 years on the area north of the Teshikpuk Lake. There are many concerns about potential impact on wildlife.
The deferred area involves the lake itself as well as the land to the north of it. When environmental groups learned about the deferral some months ago, they lifted their objections. The October NPRA lease sale will also include some acreage in the northwestern part of the reserve. NPRA is estimated to contain 3.7 billion barrels of recoverable oil, but BLM Assistant Director Henry Bisson says it also has significant natural gas deposits.
NPRA actually is extremely important for future gas resources. It's probably going to be more important from a gas standpoint than it is from oil.
ConocoPhillips Alpine Project is located just to the east of the lease area. Anadarko and FEX also have holdings near there. Bisson said so far 25 exploratory wells have been drilled in the parts of NPRA the BLM has leased.
There have been some discoveries, but at this point there is no production in NPRA, and what we're very hopeful is that that will happen in the next few years, perhaps the first production coming from ConocoPhillips.
Stan Center of Audubon, Alaska, called the deferral of the Teshikpuk Lake area a step in the right direction. He said it gives environmental groups some time to work toward getting Congress to permanently protect the area. Shell Oil is using Dutch Harbor as a staging ground for its research in the Chukchi and Beaufort Seas. Vessels of various sizes were in port until recently, and others still remain in preparation for seismic, shallow hazard, marine mammal, and baseline environmental research. The seismic research is scheduled to begin next week in the Chukchi Sea lease area purchased by Shell for $2.7 billion last February. Shell Alaska spokesman Curtis Smith says Shell has been collecting seismic data in the Arctic for decades. Smith says Shell was drilling for oil in the Arctic in the 1980s and 90s, but shut down because it wasn't profitable. He says now it is. This year's seismic research vessel cruise is accompanied by two boats that host marine mammal observers.
It's really critical that we have them on board because we want to have the least possible impact on marine mammals in the area. So the marine mammals observers, their main job is to look out for a number of designated species. And if any of those species enter what we call the safety zone, we need to know that so we can ramp down our operations until those species leave.
They also have acoustic recorders on the seafloor to capture sounds of whales and other animals. Other vessels in the research fleet are looking on the seafloor for hazards, like old shipwrecks and studying ice gouges. Smith says understanding ice gouging trends is important for protecting any equipment they would use in the area.
So if by year on, after year, we can map the way the ice gouges the sea floor, we call it strudel scouring, we can better understand what sort of depth and width and sort of mass are we dealing with in terms of what we can't see, and ice below the water surface.
The current research proceeds drilling exploration. Smith says the drilling and development timeline are not yet clear. Shell is also conducting community outreach programs with Chukchi and Beaufort communities. Smith says they plan on using Dutch Harbor for future staging areas as well. Mark Begich today released his plans for reducing the nation's tax burden on middle-class Americans. In his campaign travels around the state, Begich says he has found that one of the major things people want is tax relief, and it's time to make the tax system work for working people instead of for special interest groups.
Alaska families don't have a lobbyist. In theory, they thought, and I think a lot of them believe, that the people who represent them there are their representatives. But I think the system back there has gotten so special interest oriented that they forgot their main focus here. And the focus is everyday people.
He called for such things as continuing the tax credit on the purchase of hybrid automobiles and more efficient boat motors, expanding credits for education, and increasing credits for health care insurance, particularly for newborn children and for treating parents who need help as dependents. He says the U.S. tax system does not reflect what people have to deal with today.
They have to deal with dependent care, where more and more families are taking care of their parents, which is a huge cost and burden. Or the cost for child care is, it's almost impossible to afford the quality child care. And, or the first-time homeowner that's struggling to save enough money to get their down payment. My tax cut plan or the tax relief plan is focused on making sure that everyday folks, everyday Alaskans, they get the benefit of the tax laws, not the tax laws working against them.
His biggest suggestion would make a permanent change to the so-called stealth tax. The alternative minimum tax was written in 1969 specifically so that 155 of the nation's richest taxpayers could not avoid paying any tax. He says it has never been adjusted for inflation, and next year 43,000 Alaskans will face an unexpected expense when their taxes are due.
My objective is to fix that so the middle class will not pay that additional tax and they get some tax relief. 43,000 Alaskans will be affected. And that's that's just the inaction of Washington, D.C. on an issue that's hitting right into the pocketbooks of everyday families all across this country. And we need to fix that so they are not penalized. It's huge.
Incumbent Senator Ted Stevens' campaign office offered no comment on the proposals. Second quarter Federal Election Commission filings for candidates running for federal office were due yesterday. The report period covers contributions and expense from April 1st through June 30th. Democratic Senate candidate Mark Begich reports raising more money than incumbent Republican Ted Stevens in the second quarter, but Stevens' campaign still has twice as much money as Anchorage Mayor Begich. Begich's campaign brought in more than $1 million in the second quarter, and Stevens raised $745,000. After expenses, Stevens has $1.68 million cash on hand, and Begich has more than $800,000. In the race for Don Young's congressional seat, Lieutenant Governor Sean Parnell raised $266,000 in the second quarter. Parnell is one of two Republicans trying to unseat incumbent Congressman Young. The other Republican, State Representative Gabrielle Ledoux, took in more than $200,000, but $157,000 of that was her own money that she loaned to her campaign. Democratic challenger Ethan Berkowitz raised nearly $115,000 for a total of $227,339. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the price of stress for Alaska families.
You can't heat your home. You can't put food on the table. Those are terrifying situations for people.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Chariot Group, an authorized Polycom partner featuring HD conferencing solutions from its new conference center in Anchorage. Information at chariotgroup.com. Each morning, the Alaska Economic Report provides updates on the most current Alaskan economic trends. APRN, providing the information you need most.
Visitors to Denali National Park will soon have an energy-efficient way to travel through the nature preserve. APRN's Eli Meneker has more.
Cascadia International has just completed work on a new hybrid tour bus to be used in Denali National Park. The fuel-efficient and emissions-reducing vehicle will be folded into the fleet of park buses. Matt Gerber, a spokesperson for Cascadia International, says there are many advantages to using the hybrid bus.
Oh my goodness, where should I start? Denali National Park is a national wildlife refuge national park. You've got very sensitive environmental issues there. They're very conscious of that with any of the vehicles they run in there. With their fleet of buses, they restrict regular passenger traffic. What this bus brings to the fold is the ability to reduce the emissions from the bus by 90% with the hybrid system.
Gerber also says the new engine is much quieter than the diesel engines currently in use, making it easier for the hybrid bus to approach wildlife in the park.
When you pull a normal diesel bus over, anybody who's been in one or been near one knows that there's a fair amount of rattle coming out of there. The rattle will be minimized, so there won't be any big roar and big puff of smoke that people are so used to seeing from diesels.
Dave Brasmer, a program manager for Innova Systems, who created the hybrid engine, says this bus is unique primarily because of where it will be used.
This is the first one that we know of in any national park anywhere, and we have 19 of them throughout the country. This is a engine idle bus, and we are now going to be moving forward and developing an engine off bus also, which is essentially the equivalent of a Toyota Prius or a Honda Civic vehicle.
Both Cascadia International and Innova Systems hope to eventually convert all of the Park Service vehicles to the hybrid system. In Anchorage, I'm Eli Miniker.
In Homer, licensed care providers and counselors are seeing an increase in the need for behavioral and mental health care, but state officials haven't noticed the trend yet. KBBI's Emily Schwing reports.
South Peninsula Behavioral Services, better known as the Center, provides behavioral and mental health services to people on the southern Kenai Peninsula. And this summer, services at the center are in high demand. Nina Allen is the CEO. She says a number of factors may be contributing to the increased need.
If you watch the news, every story gets worse than the next, and you almost have to laugh because you just can't believe how bad things are.
Allen says the need for behavioral and mental health services always increases in the summer because more people come to Homer during the warmer season. But the demand for care this summer may be higher than average.
When you really push people to their max, when you can't get around, you can't pay for your gas, you can't heat your home, you can't put food on the table, those are terrifying situations for people. And as I said before, you know, without that hope that things are going to get better, people become pretty desperate and, you know, obviously depressed.
To sum it up, fuel prices and energy costs have skyrocketed. Food prices are up, and the Supreme Court's final decision over Exxon Valdez punitive damage awards didn't help much. The salmon aren't running on the Kenai, among other places, and everyone in Homer is complaining about the weather. But Allen doesn't think people are at the end of their rope just yet.
I really believe in a couple things. I believe that people are very resilient, and I also believe that we have to be hopeful about the future, and I'm very hopeful that things are going to have to change.
Stacy Toner is the Deputy Director for the Division of Behavioral Health for the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. She says there is an increase in the need for care in Homer, but the state hasn't picked up on any trends regarding mental health care. Toner admits this may be because the state only runs reports on a quarterly basis.
I did look at the numbers for the agency that you're speaking of, and their numbers do appear to have slightly increased. But we've also seen decreases in other parts of the state. So I'm uncertain as to what's going on, but we probably need to look at that and try to investigate what is changing in the system and needs are growing in different parts of the state, and if we need to consider getting more dollars out to some of the communities that are experiencing more crisis.
Toner says she agrees that this is a tough time to be an Alaskan resident.
We are aware that life in Alaska is getting more complicated, and it's harder for people to afford living here, and that's causing an increase in substance abuse issues and other things. We are looking at it. We don't have a grand plan at this point, but I think we're going to be talking with our providers about what we might be able to do to help address that.
But Toner says Allen is correct. It's not quite time to give up yet. Last year, the legislature funded grant increases for substance abuse services. Among other funding, $750,000 went to the support for basic core services, And this year, the legislature granted a rate increase for Medicaid services, which will improve the benefits and pay for health care providers. So the state is prepared to help better serve the needs of its residents. Reporting in Homer, I'm Emily Schwenk.
A state commission aimed at helping Alaskans mediate disputes with federal land managers will be headquartered in Fairbanks. The Citizens Advisory Commission on Federal Lands is back after being defunded in 1999. A bill sponsored by Fairbanks Representative Mike Kelly revived the commission last year. Kelly says he responded to Alaskans struggling with federal land use rules.
These are reasonable folks that want to look in and see that the process is reasonable, and where they see that it's never what was intended by law and unpermitted by law, they can change that.
Kelly applauds the appointment this week of Stan Liepart of Fairbanks to be the Advisory Commission's executive director. Liepart previously served in the position for 15 years. He says problems that arose with the implementation of the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act have not gone away.
Issues related to trapping cabins on some of the wildlife refuges. Access issues are always there. Everything from airplane access in some of the units, snow machine access, access to end holdings.
Liepart, who began his new job yesterday, says he's working to gather the details on specific cases the commission has identified around the state. The commission chaired by Rick Shikora of Fairbanks includes representatives from communities statewide. Anchorage's vehicle emissions maintenance test will continue. Last night, in a split vote, the Anchorage Assembly repealed an ordinance that would have ended the program on December 31, 2009. KSKA's Len Anderson reports.
For 2 hours in a pretty even split, the public testified for and against the emissions test. The arguments were much the same as 8 months ago when the Assembly voted to abolish the program by an 8-2 vote.
My name is Steve Malarvey. I've been an auto mechanic here in Anchorage for about 25 years and doing IM tests for about 14. My feeling is that the IM program in its current form has run its course.
Rick Braun agreed.
The IM program should die. Put a stake in it. Kill it.
Like others, Braun said it was no longer the IM test, but catalytic converters and self-monitoring computer systems contained in the cars themselves that were making the difference.
The cars are solving the air quality problem. The biggest thing that says we don't have an air quality problem is 12 years of no failures.
Dr. Dick Monsager said the anti-pollution systems were not perfect. The test was still needed.
Say, as cars get older, they do fail, and we don't need to do it at 4 years like we did before. Cars are better. I encourage you to not break a system that's working.
Monsager was one of several physicians and lung association representatives speaking in favor of the test. Prior to the IM program, Anchorage's air pollution levels frequently exceeded federal standards. The violations jeopardized residents' health and the city's federal funding. The approximately 25-year-old city program requires vehicles to pass the test every 2 years for the state to renew registration. The cost is approximately $60. Assembly Chair Matt Klayman distributed a municipal tally of Anchorage vehicles failing the test in 2006. That year, just under 3% of 4-year-old vehicles failed the IM test. With 10-year-old vehicles, that rose to 12%, and with 18-year-old vehicles, it was 24% failure. Laura Muller was concerned with no IM requirement, people would have no incentive to fix their vehicles.
I have asthma. My daughter has asthma. I would ask you to please not leave my child at the mercy of people who may or may not feel like getting their car serviced.
Like the public testimony, the assembly debate over continuing the IM test followed a similar pattern to the one last November. Assemblymember Debbie Osiander spoke against continuing the test.
Carbon monoxide emissions have decreased over 60%, and all the projections show them continuing to decrease dramatically. Note this chart that was passed out. With or without an IM program, the air is going to get cleaner.
Member Sheila Selcraig was one of 5 co-sponsors backing continuation.
We're in a category of cities that have some of the worst air in the country. It's based on EPA standards. We still have a serious air problem in this community, and this tool is a good tool, and it does reduce the CO in the air by 9 tons a day.
If the arguments were the same as last November, the assembly makeup is not. April's municipal election shifted the balance of power from conservative to liberal, as reflected in the final 6-4 vote favoring the emissions maintenance testing. One assembly member was excused because of conflict of interest. The approved ordinance does contain some changes from the former program. New vehicles would not be tested for 6 years. 1967 and older cars are considered historic and would not require a test. And cars with new or modified engines would now be allowed if they met tailpipe emission standards. In Anchorage, this is Len Anderson.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The U.S. Bankruptcy Court for the District of Alaska has set a deadline for filing claims for anyone who has been sexually abused or injured by priests or anyone working for the Fairbanks Diocese. The deadline is December 2, 2008. Claim forms are available online at dioceseoffairbanks.org or by calling 1-888-570-6269. This message is sponsored by the Catholic Bishop of Northern Alaska.
The Matanuska-Susitna Borough has signed a memorandum of agreement with the village of Tionic to provide ferry service between the Cook Inlet Village and Anchorage and the Matsu Valley. Borough Manager John Duffy told Matsu Borough Assembly members last night that the MV Susitna Ferry Project is moving forward. Duffy said the borough has received a letter from Anchorage Mayor Mark Begich suggesting the borough seek dual permits for two possible Anchorage landing sites.
One of the thoughts that the mayor had was why not submit two permit applications, one for the Port of Anchorage and one for Ship Creek. And to move forward with an application with the Corps will cost us about $40,000 just to do the engineering design for the Port of Anchorage. So what we're trying to figure out is there a way that we can proceed with this dual permit application process and not have to spend that, you know, $40,000. You know, maybe we can get the cost down is what we're trying to do. We're trying to figure that out.
The issue of just where the ferry is to land in Anchorage has caused some friction between the two entities in the past. Duffy says he's optimistic that an agreement can be worked out. On the positive side, Duffy says Tionic villagers would benefit from future ferry service to Anchorage because the ferry is expected to be much cheaper than airfare.
Allows the members of the Tionic Village, Tionic Native Corporation, to have a major change in the quality of their life. I mean, it's very, very expensive to travel from Tionic to Anchorage. Anchorage would be the major beneficiary of this because the shopping trips, the medical trips, finance trips, all of those types of things are to Anchorage.
The new ferry is under construction in Ketchikan and is expected to be delivered to Matsu early next year. No officials from Tionic were available for comment on the story. The new winter ferry schedule will be out in a few weeks. It will reflect changes to Bellingham, Sitka, Lynn Canal, and Tenneke sailings. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld talked to ferry officials and filed this story.
Marine Highway staffers are getting the ferry schedule covering October through April ready for release. It includes some, but not all, of the changes communities asked for after seeing the original a few months ago. Operations Director Chuck Van Kirk says one change shifts fast ferry sailings between Juneau and Sitka.
What was happening this winter was it was a Friday-Monday schedule. And so we just backed that up one day to a Thursday-Sunday, which seemed to fit better for Sitka in terms of a lot of their school travel, for instance. Kids would be able to come over on Thursdays and then return on Sundays.
The fast ferry Chiniga, filling in for the fair weather, will sail between Juneau and Haines on Fridays and Saturdays. Skagway will be included in the Saturday run. The winter schedule also changes sailings between Juneau and Tenneke Springs. Tenneke stops have been tacked onto the end of the Leconte's Juneau-Hoonah run, making for a lengthy sailing.
We looked at still providing consistent service, but putting that Tenneke stop on the way to and from Angoon. That way we're just deviating slightly from the Angoon trip, and adding Tinneke into that rather than making a special trip all the way from Hoonah out to Tinneke and back. And so we've eliminated a considerable amount of runtime there.
The Lacandes, Tinneke, and Angoon stops will happen Thursdays and Saturdays this winter. The Juneau-based ship will sail to and from Hoonah on Mondays and Fridays, and it will run to Haines and Skagway on Sundays and Wednesdays, and Haines only on Tuesdays. The October through April ferry schedule also shifts vessels on the Bellingham route. The Columbia was slated to connect the Marine Highway southernmost port to southeast. Van Kirk says the smaller Malaspina will instead sail the route. Both ships have the same passenger capacity, but the Malaspina has fewer cabins and less room for vehicles.
The difference between the cost of operating the Columbia and the Malaspina on that run were significant, especially with our increased cost of fuel.
The schedule changes do not meet all community concerns. Sitka, for example, asked for more service, not just a schedule shift, and Petersburg requested additional sailings on a more usable timetable. The winter operating plan is expected to be online July 22nd and in print by late August. This is Ed Schoenfeld reporting from Juneau.
A surge of red salmon moving up the Copper River has allowed the Department of Fish and Game to liberalize fishing for dipnetters at Chitna. Area management biologist Mark Somerville says a subpar sockeye run had been hurting commercial, sport, and subsistence harvests, but that fish numbers turned around dramatically the first week of July.
The commercial fishery was shut down for over 16 days, and that allowed the opportunity for fish to move upriver, and then we had a burst of fish come through the sonar over the 4th of July weekend, and those large numbers, over 100,000 fish in 3 days, really made a difference for the next 2 weeks of the fishery here in the Chitna area.
Somerville says planned restrictions on dip netting were canceled, and fishermen now have an opportunity to net surplus red salmon. Back-to-back supplemental harvest periods allow dip netters to take an additional 10 sockeyes this week and next. Those fish are over and above the normal seasonal limit of 30 per family. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from Ann Hillman in Unalaska, Emily Schwing in Homer, Len Anderson in Anchorage, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau. APRN's Dave Donaldson also reported from Juneau, and Steve Heimel, Ellen Lockyer, and Eli Menaker from Anchorage. Dave Waldron is our audio engineer. John Proffitt is our webmaster. Our managing editor is Duncan Moon, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by the Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, operating and maintaining the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company, and by St. Elias Specialty Hospital, a long-term acute care hospital seeking qualified nursing staff. More information at 907-564-2225. Leading a nonprofit organization or tribal government is challenging. The Rasmussen Foundation Sabbatical Program provides nonprofit CEOs and tribal administrators with paid time off to reflect on their work, renew their personal energy, and avoid professional burnout. You can apply or nominate someone you know at rasmussen.org or call toll-free 877-366-2700 for an application. Application deadline is October 1st. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.